The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Friday, the 12th of February, 2021. On the podcast today, John Wood, CEO of Infrastrata, talks about the rationale for the acquisition of the assets of Burnt Island Fabrication Limited. Also on the podcast, Paul Hill, full-time investor, equity analyst, gives his view on the markets and stocks. Companies mentioned are Taylor Wimpey, Escape Hunt, Northbridge Industrial, Proactus Holdings, Brandshield, U Group, Verici DX, Gilead Sciences, and Merck. And at the end of the podcast, as always, I have two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked, most read RNSs too. Check out both those lists at voxmarkets.co.uk, where you'll also see lots of other content. In fact, there's a webinar there from MGC Pharma, in fact, one of the most followed companies at the moment. I hosted that there with Robbie and Brett. Also, you can check out their Mode Global Holdings launches Android app while Bitcoin trading volumes soar. Articles there. And of course, don't forget our COVID-19 index. Biggest riser today is React Group, up 7.25% at 1.8. Biggest faller, Cromec Group, twice on a trot there, down 14%, pretty much 15% at 16.75. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Wood, CEO of Infrastrata. INFA is a ticker there. John, thanks for joining me.
Good morning. Good to be here and good to be talking to you again.
Yeah, absolutely. And keeping busy, I see. News out today. Acquisition of Burnt Island Fabrication Limited, or BIFAB. So we'll talk about that in a bit. But as always, John, if people are listening and not familiar with Infrastrata, just give them a brief summary as to what it's all about, please, if you could.
Oh, Infrastrata, organization interested in gas storage projects, hydrogen and carbon capture. In addition, we have Harland & Wolff Shipyard Group with facilities in Belfast and down in Appledore. And adding on to today, the new acquisitions up in Scotland. But look, we're into ship repair, shipbuilding, ship conversion, and with the government new policies on the green industrial revolution for renewables and the shipbuilding renaissance, it's a great place to be at the moment.
Yeah. Well, exactly. Well, give us the, you know, the rationale behind this then, if you could, John.
Well, I think, you know, when you look at the facilities we've got, Belfast and Appledore, we believe they'll be fully occupied in the shipbuilding side. We've done a lot of work recently on renewables and positioning ourselves for renewables. But the project runway for renewable contracts is anything from 3 to 5 years. And we only got in on the game when we acquired the Belfast site in December 19. So what this does is this gets us on that project runway for the projects that have been running a lot longer. So it really gets us access and on the tender list for a whole chunk of additional projects. But it gives us additional capacity in really strategic locations on the east coast of Scotland, where there's an array of wind farm projects. And I think only recently, you know, there was a Crown Estate announcement with four new leases awarded to BP and RWE, you know, for projects in the Irish Sea and the Dogger Bank, which really lines up with these two sites. Look, two very different sites. I think methyl will be a real fabrication for renewables and defence projects. Arnish is a really exciting opportunity. Given the deep water access, we believe there's an opportunity for floating dock in there. There's some really specialist rolling and bending equipment which can be used for forming hull plates for submarines, for example, making cans and risers for renewable projects. And look, there's a lot of marine traffic goes around the Highlands and Islands. So look, we see that yard as really a feeder yard for building vessel blocks and components. and supplying them into the main assembly yard in Belfast. So I think that, you know, all the yards strategically fit together. And I think, look, given us, you know, that global footprint in the UK around all the different countries in home nations, it really fits in well to what we're looking at doing going forward.
Excellent stuff. And generally, how is business? How is things looking? Are you optimistic?
Well, I think when you look at the pipeline, we've got a huge pipeline. I think things have slowed down, obviously, with COVID. But, you know, the pipeline increases day on day. It gets stronger and stronger. And we're starting to see people starting to really make decisions now, which we've not seen for really the last 6 months. Things are beginning to sort of move on. And look, with these additional sites, we believe a P-win rate on some of the projects will increase dramatically just because of the geographical location of the projects being closer to it. And I think the other key thing is some of these projects are getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And with our existing site, we wouldn't have enough capacity to undertake the size of the projects. So now with these extra sites, it gives you that capacity. But look, we've got our core markets across defence, oil and gas, cruise and ferry, commercial and renewables. And I think the beauty about the business is even if one of those markets tapers off a little bit, you've still got the other markets to rely on. And I think one of the things we really set a foundation in when we put the strategy together a couple of years ago was not to be over top heavy in one of those areas and really keep the business balanced and keep the risk portfolio balanced. And I think, you know, when you look at the type of work that we do across the board, you know, from technical services, that's a 3D design, visual walkthrough stuff, fabrication, construction, the repairs and maintenance, in-service support, conversion, and then eventually at the end of the life, decommissioning. It's a real through-life service. And I think, you know, you look at Belfast, it's gone from being a desolate site with nothing happening on it to a hive of activity. And last year, you know, we went from zero to having 30 large vessels through the yard. And we expect, you know, Appledore down in Devon, you know, we've gone through an upgrade program there, taking the dock gates out, putting 25 tons of steel in the dock gates, replacing them. And we think the first vessel will go into that yard probably in about 2-3 weeks up on slipway down there that's also been refurnished. So it's, look, everything's coming together. And with all these strategies, they take a bit of time to come together, and COVID's not helped, but we're delighted to see that Brexit hasn't caused us any issues.
Yeah. It's funny you say that some, you know, people are starting to look forward and starting to spend and plan again, because there's certainly some green shoots of positivity coming out there. I mean, I know it's one of the big banks, JP Morgan, said there's a super cycle starting now. It'll be a boom over the next 5-10 years, starting with commodities. And you see the governor, the economist from the Bank of England saying that there's pent up, you know, financial energy and the spring back, and people are starting to look forward, you know, and they are starting to make plans and start spending. So I think there is positive momentum, isn't there, looking forward to the end of the lockdown, the vaccinations here, and the fact that we probably won't have a bigger wave next time as we had last time. Maybe we won't have another lockdown. So, yeah, I think there is a lot of positivity out there, isn't there?
Yeah, I think so. And I think we're actually seeing it. You know, it's like the cruise industry. You know, we've been talking to cruise companies for near on a year. We managed to get four of those big cruise vessels in the yard. But we've been talking about 17 projects, I think, we've tendered. And they've been sat on the shelf. And now they're all really getting ready to come back into service. And they need to come in and get serviced before they do that. So I think, you know, there's going to be a scramble. And I think with the government's policies around renewables, and the, you know, the shipbuilding renaissance in the creating of the export market and the defence, and, you know, BAE Systems and Babcock's been awarded the additional work that they've got. You just say to yourself that the whole fabrication market in the UK is going to go wild. And even with these additional sites that we've acquired, we still think there'll be a shortage. Because really, for every construction project that goes on throughout the UK, including Hinkley Point, HS2, they all need substantial fabrication. And you know, those are other areas that we're heavily involved in looking at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. Okay, John, well, listen, if someone's listening to this and likes the sound of the progress you're making here but are not yet following the story, just give them, if you could, the three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Fox Markets and add Infrastrata to their watch list, please.
Well, I think, look, we're at the early stage of our corporate journey. We've got lots of news coming out in the next couple of quarters. And, you know, that early stage of the journey, you know, the government policy is lined up for every sector that we're in. And look, we're coming out of COVID. And as you said yourself, we're in a time where industry is really going to thrive, and fabrication in construction is part of that. So, look, it's a great place to be. And we're looking forward to the journey.
Excellent stuff. John, good to chat to you. And like I said, lots going on, so hopefully we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thanks for that. Talk again soon.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
Welcome to the podcast and video. We're on video. We're, you know, in view and in sound. And, of course, if you want the video, go to the Vox Markets there YouTube channel. You can subscribe. Hit that notification button as well to get it to your inbox. Paul Hill, full-time investor, equity analyst, is with me as well. You're up, Paul.
Yeah, good morning, Justin. And a big 5-0 congrats on the birthday. So I hope that all listeners send you masses of emails and Twitter accounts for your birthday on the 50th. Today.
It's a bit worrying. Do you know what? It's almost, I've been a bit inspired. I was watching it. I don't know if you watched it. Worth watching, actually. The Trump Show on BBC iPlayer is a five-parter, and it goes from, and it talks to people who are very close to him, who are working with him all throughout his period and all that stuff. And it's amazing. It comes to the end, the guy's obviously highly deluded and just wouldn't accept a loss. But when you think of it, his age and Biden, and even people like, you know, Captain Tom, you think, do you know what? 50 may seem like an old age, but guys like that have achieved something. You know, like Trump is 70-odd, Biden's 70-odd, they're running for president. Captain Tom raised, about 50 million all told when he's 100. Something in, do you know what? It's not the end, it's the start, I think. You know?
Oh, yeah, you've got life ahead of you there. Because, yeah, I mean, there was a 72-year-old guy from Teenside who rode across the Atlantic last week and was the eldest guy ever to do that, to hit the Bahamas.
I saw that. And so you realise, you know, think, you can achieve a lot. And in fact, somebody said to me, Ferrari produced his first Ferrari at the age of 50 or something, 40 or something, really old, you know, he's not old, I mean, you know, not in his youngest. So, you know, it's all still to play for, Paul. How old are you? You're 50 as well, aren't you?
I'm 53.
Yeah, there we are.
Well, there was a guy, you remember the guy who set up IG Index?
Yeah.
He was 55 when he started that.
Well, do you know what? I'm starting a new project. And in fact, you can go to my website, sharepickers.com, find out, you know, sign up for that. I'm starting a new project. It's very exciting. I'm very excited about it. And I've been working on it for a while. And it's investing related. But I'm going to be announcing that very soon. I thought I might as well start it with my 50th year. You know?
Yeah, we'll look forward to hearing what it's all about.
Let's talk about the markets then, initial thoughts, and what's happening, Paul? What's dominating your thoughts at the moment?
Just reiterating what we chatted, everybody's on the same side of the boat. I spoke to a really super smart fund manager earlier this week, Dan Hanbury, for River and Mercantile. Yeah. And his sort of like view of the markets, that they are a bit toppy, a bit like ours. And we could well see a sort of like some of the wind taken out the sails of some of the high flying sort of tech and renewables and hydrogen and all that kind of stuff. And we might well see a sort of a rotation. So I think it's important for investors to have a look at your portfolio and just look at the construction and how it's all set up. And that's part and parcel of what I continually do, and I'm sure you do as well. But I sort of like, I've bought, and we'll go on to a bit later, but I've bought another sort of defensive healthcare stock to give me a bit more ballast, because if we go into a period of higher volatility, margin and multiple compression in terms of the actual markets, then you might well see that the sort of like the steady Eddie type companies with high IP and good pricing power, like in healthcare, for instance, then do well, or at least sort of help your portfolio stay stable rather than being sort of like, you know, all on one side of the boat into technology or into software or renewables or even, you know, sort of like the high ones on the medical side. So on the portfolio construction, I mean, just to give investors a feel of mine, I've got sort of like half of my portfolio in small caps, half of them in large caps. And then the sector split wise, my biggest sector is software, but now my next one is healthcare. And then I've got sort of like bits and pieces in sort of like house building and banks and fintech and all that kind of stuff. But I've only got now 12% cash. I feel my portfolio is reasonably well resilient if we do go through a bit of, you know, volatility. And it gives you that liquidity, the big caps as well. So I think people should have a good look at how their portfolio is constructed.
Yeah, let me ask you a question then, right? A few quick answers here. How many stocks do you hold then at the moment currently?
10.
10 stocks, yeah. And so, I mean, I was looking at that for a while. You know, a lot of people talk about how many stocks you should have, diversification, all that. And I was looking at it. For a private investor, you shouldn't have any more than 10, I was thinking. And if you want to be more diversified, you can get a fund. You know, that's what that's about, more than that. But it's hard to keep a track properly in detail on 10 stocks. And then when you get more anyway, diluting the potential reward you get. You've got to have it's a fine line between risk and reward. If you have too many, you're never going to make a good chunk of money because it's too diluted. So, but I don't understand. I've seen private investors have 20, 30 stocks and they're not billionaires. I'm thinking, what are you doing? How do you keep track of all that? And all you're doing is diluting your returns essentially. But also, you mentioned there software. And of course, that seeps into many different sectors. Tech and most of my portfolio is pretty much tech based, but the sectors are in different, but all sort of tech based pretty much, because that's the way it is these days, isn't it? So tech is in itself can be very diversified. Let's go to house builders first of all, though. What's your thoughts? I don't know if you saw about this, the stamp duty, 31st of March, that stamp duty holiday expires. And they reckon there's, because apparently a surge in house buying went on when it's announced the stamp duty holiday, they reckon there's about 150 to 300,000 sales could fall through if they don't extend the stamp duty period at the moment. What's the share price of?
Yeah, I mean basically the stamp duty is to me a non-issue. Oh, the Chancellor is going to extend it, so I think that the chances of them not extending it is less than 25%. So I'm holding my house bill, you know, to Taylor Wimpey, for instance, simply because I just don't think Rishi Sunak is going to shoot himself in the foot and damage a potential economic recovery by not extending at least for another 6 months. I think we'll hear that on the 4th of March when he does his budget. So I'm absolutely not bothered with that. In fact, I think the house builders will rally pretty well on the back of it because people are putting too much risk associated with it. I mean, the wealth effect from the housing market is frankly so important for the whole country that why are you going to risk it? And, you know, I just think it's going to... That's just going to continue.
I think as long as he says something, even if he says something like the people who've already, you know, going through the system, normally you would have got through by now. Houses would have cleared, all legal things have been done, contract swapped, exchange. But because there's so many people, you know, buying a house at the moment, that's the problem. So even if he says people already in the system, you'll still be able to get that, you know, that break, that stamp duty break, that cut. That's even if he doesn't want to add to it, because they need to. You can't just have, you know, 150,000 sales fall through, because that will have a knock-on effect. And
I just can't see it happening. Why shoot yourself in the foot when you're extending all kinds of things like furlough schemes and all that kind of stuff? It just doesn't make any. Particularly when in reality it's peanuts in terms of value wise. Yeah. One question for you actually is on your portfolio management. How are you managing as escape hunt? Because I saw on the company website you're in the disclosable list there.
So yeah. It's funny, isn't it? Yeah, 24, 25 pence. I bought them at 7.5, so done quite well there. But I'm going to hold, because do you know what? I've spoken with the guys. They're very sharp cookies. They know what they're doing. They've got a positive roadmap to get towards, you know, 50 sites. They're only at 18 at the moment. But they're the only leisure company I know, like I said, it was expanded during COVID. And also adopted a digital side, which is helping them, and a play-at-home side. So they've really adapted, and that shows me the smartness of the management to do that when it was largely a physical sort of leisure business, and now it's digital as well, and digital is blue sky. But I think, do you know what? We may have, it's risen quite quickly, but the chart is looking okay. It cools down, and it climbs up again, because essentially, I can see them getting to 50, and they'll do that within 3 years.
Where do you hold the shares? Do you hold it in a tax wrapper?
ISA. All my shares in ISA. Whenever someone asks me about shares, I always say, before you do anything, you know, stocks and shares, ISA. You know, put it in that.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, because most people starting off, will not have generally more than 20 grand to chuck in straight away, you know. So every year you can put 20 grand in. If you bag the next apple, there's no tax on that at all. That's it.
It's worth actually investors just sort of thinking about what could happen in the budget, because the Chancellor so far has actually indicated that he's going to hold effectively income tax, VAT, and I think pensions all, you know, as their triple lock. But that means the moving parts are going to be capital gains. So if anybody is sitting on... anybody's sitting on a major capital gain outside of a tax wrapper, then they may want to take some at least this year to utilise your tax allowance, if nothing else. So it's something to think about anyway.
I once said a new people, you know, people are investing for a long time, know about it, but I said if you're starting off, first thing you should do is take up your full allowance there in the ISA, because... you know, what's annoying is literally making a good gain on the stock if you do well. And you realize, hang on, there's a big chunk of that going to the tax man. So, I mean, it didn't have to be if you've taken out your allowance. So, yeah, it's worth doing that. But
just a bit of tax efficiency. And how much is Escape Hunter part of your portfolio? It must be quite a big chunk, isn't it? Or is it not?
It's
roughly 20%.
Yeah, it's not above. Nothing in my portfolio. I never try and get anywhere near 30%. So it's just around about below that. So I try and stick to around between 10% and 20% on most stocks. But just one of those stocks. I don't know why. I think it's been my biggest holding. But I just have confidence. I spoke to the guys, and they're very professional guys. They know what they're doing. And I said. I think they've come out stronger from COVID. Two reasons. First of all, they've got the digital play. They've expanded their physical footprint. But they completely said over and over again, we've been getting landlords approaching us now, the landlords we approached last time, and we wouldn't be able to afford to put the down payment on the units for these shopping malls. But they've come to us now, and they're willing to share sort of some of the burden, going revenue split and all that stuff. So they said, the risk is not on us. So we have our pick of choice of excellent venues and events and, high footfall areas. So they benefited in many ways. And they've got cash, they've raised cash as well. When they first went into lockdown, they had 11 sites. Now they've got 18 sites.
Absolutely. I think it just really comes down to your risk tolerance, your age, and what you're looking to do with your investment horizons, because I've had some super smart investors, the guys from Gresham, allow only really top slice at sort of like 40% of their, when it gets to a sort of like a position of 40% in their holding, they want a top slice. Yeah. But equally, I've heard some really good guys, you know, who basically start top slicing at 10%. So it's really...
it's interesting, isn't it? That's interesting that, because it's always, you know, good to have a certain figure in your head, regardless of what the company is or whatever, of where you should be top slicing or how much you should be exposing. But then, of course, it comes down to specifics. And what is the risk? You think, okay, with small caps, essentially, the biggest risk is not having cash, isn't it? They're running out of cash. That's a major issue.
No,
I know, but what I'm saying is, small microcaps that don't have debt, okay, because they just started off, them having to raise cash is the problem for a shareholder. Let's say they can raise it, fine, but I mean, they may have to do it at a discount and it dilutes holders. That's one of the risks there, but I mean, you've got to look at the risks. It's for every specific company, I suppose.
Yes.
You can't just say, okay, that I'm going to have the same sort of policy for every stock I hold, because you've got to look at them individually, you know? And that's why I'm quite comfortable sitting on a nice gain, and it'll probably consolidate a little bit and come back, I don't mind, but I'm looking at longer term here. I think give them a couple of years to get to that 50 sites, and I think they'll be doing really well. So,
I mean, in that context, when you're looking longer term, I mean, one of my investments, which hasn't done well actually, it's still sort of like underwater, but I've got really good hopes about it over the next 12 months, is Northbridge. And I interviewed Eric Hook, the CEO, again earlier this week, and I'd recommend investors have a good look at it, because he was sort of indicating the back end of this year, once we've gone through mass vaccinations, the economy starts to open up. This guy is conservative and pretty modestly spoken. He can see, in inverted commas, a mini boom coming. Mm. And that, for somebody like him, is really saying something. And it's not surprising to a certain extent, because, their big Crestchick business, which does load banks, which tests electrical networks and battery farms and stuff like that, and backup power supplies. I mean, that's just going, you know, potentially, well, it is going gangbusters. It's got a record order book in terms of supplying load banks to data centers, but also the rental stuff, when they actually start opening the economy. I mean, you're going to see huge amounts of sort of like, you know, pent up demand coming down the pike on that one. You get huge drop through rates. So, you know, that one could be turning this exiting 2021. This could turn into a money machine, in my view.
Yeah. Do you see that JP Morgan thing about the commodity super cycle and the economy boom going to happen, they reckon? Because they were saying that they last saw, there's been four super cycles in commodities. One was just previous to the great financial crash, and 10 years previous to that, the growth. And one was before the 1980s start, ended to was the end, the start of the 1980s. Now we're coming to another one, and they reckon it's going to start. They last for 10 years, these things, you know, super cycles. But it's very interesting, and they reckon it's just optimism about the economy locking back, opening back up, vaccinations working, all that stuff, and just. The companies that tend to be around are the stronger ones, the weaker ones. In fact, I said to another guy on the podcast, a bit like, you know, humans, the ones that get killed and taken out by COVID are the ones with the weak immune systems. Same with business. The businesses get taken and down are the ones with debt, balance sheets that are not sustainable anyway, but this pandemic takes them down. And then what's left are the stronger players who just swallow up market share. So those become stronger. And if you invest in those companies that are quite strong anyway, they do better, you know, and they grow faster.
Because absolutely. These ones don't depend on the commodity price. I mean, basically, if anything, it's renewables is the key driver and carbon reduction. Because, you know, it's sort of like it's network stability that drives that lot their top line on the Crestcheek Lowe's brand. I mean, just give you an indication. I mean, in the pandemic year, so when GDP went down by 10%, their sales and PBT stayed broadly flat year on year, and they actually reduced their debt. What they're going to do when the economy starts opening up on operating leverage? I mean, it's going to be fabulous. Hopefully fabulous. So, you know, I wrote a quick article on social media. And for a small cap stock, that's one of my most positive sort of like, you know, thoughts going forward. And then the other division they've got is Tasman, which is basically, you know, it's a natural gas and geothermal drilling tool operators that are down in Australasia. And that whole Australasia natural gas is going gangbuster. Yeah. So, I mean, not immediately, but it should be by the end of the year anyway. When it comes to valuation,
it sounds good. But like I said last time, it's one of those things. It's a bit of a complex the story. It's a couple of moving parts.
It's
the story,
dead simple. You can get your head around what a load bank is. It's dead simple.
When you said load bank before, when you first mentioned them, I mean, first on the podcast, I don't know, a while back now, but you first mentioned load banks, I thought I'd look up what that was. And I thought, and then you mentioned Tasman, the other side of it. No, but what I'm saying, the story. For you, you know about Inside Out, of course. But when you first have to give it a sell to someone or tell someone about it, it's hard to say it in a sentence, isn't it? Because it's like you have to sort of explain little bits of it.
Okay. If you're going to take one thing away from it, and if you just basically...
If I said, what do they do? What are you saying?
You want to take one thing away from it, i.e. where the shares are, what it's worth, and what it potentially could be worth. I'll give it you in a nutshell. The shares are currently £1, 100p. I've got a fair value for it, 175, which is modest, okay? You may have heard last week there was a big... similar power plant hire or renter out, Agrico, who's just had a bid from private equity on what they call about 1.7 times price to book. If you use a similar multiple on Northbridge on its replacement value of its hire fleet, you get a share price of over £3. So if you want three numbers, it's trading at £1. I believe conservatively it's worth 175. But if somebody buys this, it could go above £3. And that would be a shame because in a year's time, I think it's going to be well over £2 because I think it's going to exit the year on an unbelievably fast momentum. Anyway, that's my view. So I would suggest if anybody is interested, have a look at that video because, as I say, Eric Hook is a really quite conservative guy. And to tell me in public, you know, publicly that he's looking for a mini boom in the back end of this year, that it says a lot of stuff. Another one, which sort of like reported or just had a trading update. The trading update is coming in a couple of weeks' time, so I'll let people know. And I don't own shares in it. Is Proactis, which basically does software as a service for spend management, and also does a bit sort of like in terms of sort of payments with a new product it's got. what was interesting about it, and this is the key takeaway, is that the CEO and the board have actually been restructuring the business to lift and shift the sort of like success they've had with their business model in the UK and Netherlands into France, Germany, and the US. They've managed already to do it into France and Germany. They've seen sales increasing. And then they've just got a landmark contract with actually a big oil and gas player out in the States. So what that says to me is that the turnaround is working. That is the last piece in the jigsaw to fall. And I'll just give you an indication on valuation. This stock trades at less than 50% of its peers in terms of price to sales, price to EBITDA, you name it, it's cheap. Yeah. And the reason why it's cheap is because people haven't yet seen the growth potential of this business. But if that momentum can continue, i.e. they've basically lifted and shifted a successful business model from the UK and Netherlands into France, tick, that was already working. Germany, tick, that was already working. The last bit, which is the US, and there's a major opportunity, huge market for them going forward. If they can carry on that momentum, that is the last piece of the jigsaw. And this will be a double-digit top-line grower organically. If that's the case, they'll be on 4 to 5 times sales, on a valuation. And they're currently less than 2 times sales, about 1.7 or 1.8 times sales. So there's plenty of upside from Proactis. So, again, it's something to watch. They're having a trading update in a couple of weeks' time, and I'm hoping to touch base with Tim Sykes, the CEO, afterwards. So I'll be able to report back here to let you know. But certainly, something to watch. No doubt about it.
Thing,
actually, the other thing which came out with it was one on your side is Brand Shield. We've talked about it because I just wondered whether you've touched base with those guys, because I was quite interested to understand whether they were getting real value from their customers from last time, because they came out with stellar results in terms of top line growth and ARR.
Yeah, it's just a start there. What I quite liked is they said, that even though they had good growth. Let me just scroll down here. So. 71% increase in annual recurring revenue. It's only a small base.
A small base, yeah.
3.28 million. 85% increase in new business ARR to 1.76. 47, lovely double digit. 47% increase in revenue, $2.6 million. Cash of $3 million. What they say, what I quite like though, is that the early part of 2021 has been continued strong ARR growth. But significantly, second half is normally a lot stronger. So there's a nice trend to start off in the first half being a lot stronger than it was in H1 last year. And yet H2 is generally the strongest half. So it's still early days there. I want to speak to the guy. Yeah. I haven't spoken to them, and they're quite elusive. Even though they keep retweeting the video I did on social media, they keep retweeting the video I did. So, but I'm asking to speak to them, and they just ignore my emails. So that's really odd. So, it's one of those.
Maybe because it's price sensitive material, they can't speak. They'll hopefully be able to speak to you afterwards. Yeah. So
it's one of those companies where I'm not 100% convinced. I quite like them, and I'm exposed, like that appropriately. I'm not fully into them yet. So it's one of those things that I like. It's in the right area. They seem to have some decent clients. The growth is quite good, but as yet, still small growth. But they say they've increased their sales force and all that. That was part of the listing. They realised they had the good product. They just want to accelerate sales. So let's see how that goes. And yeah. I don't know a company I don't hold, but it's odd because Bobby Kalar is the CEO and founder of U Group. Mm. And I didn't know much about it. Mentioned on social media a lot. It's the independent
energy services, yeah. Isn't it? The UK corporate business energy services.
Yeah, corporate gas, electricity, water. They're trying to disrupt the big sort of four or five. I don't know how many there are now, but it started off. And this happened to another company. What was the company called? Utility Wise. They had problems before with overstating revenue. And when Bobby came to the market, he did the same. So they have a company to book, pre-book, say, 1,000, say, units of, say, energy in purchase, and they'd book that as revenue, and the company wouldn't use as much. And so they'd have to claw that back kind of thing, So there was a big problem with that early on with it. And he said to me, he came on the podcast, and he's so enthusiastic, and he really believes in the business. He's got a lot of ambition. And he came alive after the podcast, just how's everything going? And he was concerned that he was a bit nervous on the podcast. And I get a lot of this sometimes. First time a CEO comes on the podcast, they're a bit nervous. And then I chat them afterwards. They're just really bubbly and really enthusiastic. And I said, if you'd been
you scare
like
them,
that,
Justin.
Yeah, no, I said, if you'd been a bit more like that on the podcast, it'd come
terrify me.
But you know what? Some people almost get a bit worried when the mics go on, they start recording. I suppose with a CEO, because they're nomad and all that has to listen, they're a bit worried, I suppose. But yeah, I think he'll be, you know, he was good, but I think he'll be a lot better next time. But one of the things they said is that the strong, I mean, it's only a 35 million mark gap. They've got, what, 11 million of cash there. They are growing. They said the strong and accelerating sales momentum continued in H2 to record levels, with average monthly bookings outperforming expectations at 10.3 million. And it was compared to 6.2 million for H1 2020 and 4.2 million for full year 2019. So you can see the growth there is very good. And
it looks super cheap for the growth.
Yeah, and he's super common. It's one worth watching because it took a big... Yeah, it fell off a cliff. It fell off a cliff. When they had a reporting issue and you know, the investigation, the reporting, it fell off a cliff. I think he holds his hands up, says, okay, listen, you know, we've looked at that and I've hired proper people now put in place. And but it's worth one. It could be. I've seen a lot of people saying it's an excellent recovery play. It's a brilliant business, and I've looked into it. It's not my area really, but I can see the potential here. You think it does seem cheap compared to what they're doing, the growth they're getting. So it's worth.
Well,
looking
you'd have thought.
At.
I mean, in a pandemic year, to get that type of growth when a lot of corporates have been cutting back, haven't been in their offices, been able to you know paying utilities and all that kind of stuff. Though you know that's got there must be winning market share. So it's. I would say energy services, like with a few other sectors, like you know oil and these kind of stuff, they've just been basically. Almost like unloved for a long time by investors. Yeah. And at some point in time, if that sentiment ever changed, you'll just get a huge re-rating on it. And actually, you've seen it with the car manufacturers because everybody used to hate car manufacturers.
Yeah, yeah.
And what's actually happened is that a lot of them have got these EV spin-outs, like General Motors, for instance. I mean, you know, now people realize it's actually one of the best technologies in EVs in the States, and its shares have doubled in 6 months on the back of EV. And so all you need is a different sentiment shift to get a re-rating, and the rating still wouldn't be expensive. So, yeah, I'm with you. It's worth having a good look at a lot of these beaten down and unloved and forgotten sectors because you find some real gems.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure the margins and all that stuff, but, I mean, it's a revenue significantly ahead of market expectations at over 100 million. 100 million of revenue. And there are 40 million market cap. Adjusted EBITDA full year is expected to be significantly ahead of market expectations. Very strong cash position, 11.7 million, an increase of 9.3 million during 2020. So that's a good cash generation there.
Yeah.
So yeah, just check it out, you know. So it did when they released that trading update, the share price, to be fair, did react and it went up by 30-odd%. But I think it's settling down a bit now. So, you know, always avoid the spike, you know.
Yeah, moving on to sectors. I mean, again, we had another update from Verici, who do immunodiagnostics for kidney transplants. And which is only a short update. But what was important to take away from that one was that they're hoping to accelerate their validation test this year. And that's important because it's breakthrough technology. And if they can bring the revenue stream and the commercialization of that proposition earlier, they're going to get, you know, better revenues. And I've said this before in terms of, you know, so looking at the shares, don't get spooked by the increase. It's just basically re-rated along with the actual sector. And it's still actually not that expensive. It was just brought on the market at 20p and ridiculously cheap. So it's certainly one that the professional boys are staying and making sure they hold that stake. So there's no way they're actually selling them, even though they've got a big profit. And another one on the healthcare sector is what I talked about last time, which was Gilead Sciences. They reported their full year results. I mean, it's basically, you know, they've done really well. They've got sort of like $7 per share of earnings coming through for this year, 2021. The shares are about 70 bucks, less than 70 bucks, in fact. So they're trading at a 9 or 10 times PE. They're going to get top line growth this year. So I think they've gone through that whole transition. And I've got some really quite good hopes for their HIV, their hepatitis, and their very promising oncology portfolio coming forward. So that looks good to me. And you get a free moonshot in terms of whether they can come up with this antiviral, you know, a sort of like a breakthrough on the antivirals. We've had a breakthrough on the vaccines, because that's what we really do need. The world needs for the people who have got weakened immune systems or alternatively, you know, don't respond well to the vaccines or can't or refuse to take them and end up in hospital. They need something to be able to get those guys better, to stop reduce the fatality rate and get them out of hospital. And that's what we need. And there's still going to be massive work associated. And these are the guys, the number one in antivirals in the worldwide. So, you know, that's what I'm very, very pleased with the results and look forward to, you know, hopefully some good news going forward.
Yeah, but, yeah. Do you know what's funny? I always think that when you see the news sometimes and the dreariness. But you know what? We are on the path out of this, and you still see... I don't know why. I suppose, does negative news sell a lot better than the scare factor? And you see a lot of negative news sometimes, but you think, if you look at the figures... I mean,
even look at Twitter.
Yeah, yeah. But look at hospital admissions, for example. And that's what we should be looking at. That's what I'm concentrating on.
Yeah.
Is because that's what will... Whether the economy will open back up or not is hospital admissions. And that's gone down now from a peak of 4,000. And I think was it yesterday just tipped below... I think 1,800 per day. So that's a big
I think it's about 26,000 in the UK, isn't
yeah,
it,
yeah.
in total?
So, yeah, so but at the peak, we were hitting 4,000 a day, and now it's down to 1,800. So it's looking good to go in the right direction. And I just think we'll have a major drop-off now, because in the last 2 weeks, we've vaccinated 50% of the most vulnerable groups in the last 2 weeks, and it takes 2 weeks for the immunity to kick in. So I think we'll start really dropping off now. And, yeah, hopefully, I'm reckoning... I'm hopeful for a March reopening, of early March reopening.
Go on holiday in April, but you can't go anywhere. That's
know,
the problem.
I'm going back to... So one thing is this, right? I thought this a long time. We are ahead of most countries on the vaccine program.
Yes.
So if our infection rates is right down, hospital admissions right down, our economy is open. But then, hang on, you can't fly to a country like France, for example, who are doing really badly at it because they're still infection rate high. So I think now the sectors you should be looking at are not just altogether travel, leisure, hospitality. It should be domestic, leisure, hospitality. Travel may take a while, or you may get some bargains in travel because they may take a hit now. People realizing that, hang on, you can't go on holidays, even if we open our economy up. Other economies around the world, travel won't be open up for another month or 2 months at least. So maybe
your escape hunt should do well.
That's basically what I'm saying. No, but do you know what? Even restaurants and stuff. So people want to go out to restaurants and stuff like that. So restaurant groups and all that stuff. So I don't know where are they? Do you know what I mean? Half decent listed restaurant groups out there, because there's.
I don't touch them with a barge pole. No, I don't like them. It's quite a difficult sector to get your head around, and it's very brand specific and fad specific. But yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, I think people want to go out, don't they?
Reopen trade and domestic tourism and stuff should do well. Another one. For the reopen trade, which is going to be really important, and it dovetails again with what you've said with hospitalizations reductions and people having to stay in the UK, is that let's just assume that occurs, and you and I both believe it is, yeah? Mm. What is the government next priority going to be? It's going to be trying to reduce the 4.5 million people who have been on waiting lists, yeah? With cancer, with basically, all those elective procedures who are needed. And this is one of the reasons why I've bought a new share, big healthcare, and I know you're not your cup of tea, because it's sort of like a boring, steady eddy grower that's going to hopefully drive double digit returns a year. And I know you're not interested in that kind of stuff, but anyway, the company is called Merck. Okay, it's out in the States. It's
you
about
should have gone for a small cap in UK. In fact, Vadim Alexander, head of healthcare at SP Angel, was talking about tissue regenics, and they're into all this area. And he was talking exactly the same theme, basically, but it's a smaller cap company, of course, not as a bit more broader.
The reason what the shares have actually come down of Merck, they are the world's number one oncology immunotherapy firm by a mile, and they've got the world's best-selling drug called Keytruda. Which if anybody wants to learn about, sort of like immunotherapy, just have a look at, search it on Google. But in a nutshell, what it does, it's a drug that allows your immune system to attack and destroy cancer cells, yeah? And it's already been through clinical trials, and it's been sold around the world to treat people who typically don't respond well to things like chemotherapy. And it's used for things like lung cancer, throat cancer, blood cancer, and it's also been extended into hopefully into breast cancer and to kidney cancer soon, because it's breakthrough technology, immunotherapy, and they're the number one in the world by a mile on this one. Well, the other two big ones are Roche and Bristol Myers as well, who also do immunotherapy. So that's their big part, their big money spinner is oncology, but they've also got good franchises in HIV, in vaccines and in hospital. Now, last year, they got whacked big time. And the reason why they got whacked was because nobody was doing elective procedures. And a lot of their hospital drugs and also cancer was being pushed to the right. So that's all coming. It ain't going anywhere. It's all coming through. So that's one of the reasons why I like it. They're going to get, as soon as you do that reopen trade here and in the US, they're going to see, major benefits of that. The NHS has got to clear its waiting lists. And also it's got, and I talked about this with Gilead and stuff, they're in phase three trials for a potential breakthrough antiviral for COVID. And they've got through phase one and phase two because it's safe and it seems to work. They haven't actually published the results, but Merck is actually scaling up its production, expecting it to work, which again may be a bit optimistic, but hey, it does say quite a lot.
Do you mean they haven't published the results of phase one and phase two yet, have they?
No, well, other than
we're not saying.
I know, because it's part of this Operation Warp Speed. They're doing it all together, but they wouldn't be. But put it this way: if you were paying the bills for this, yeah, and you haven't published them, would you continue doing it and taking the cost and resource away from all your other areas if you believed it? If it was going to not work at phase one and phase two,
exactly,
the answer to that is you wouldn't. You'd carry on with it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, did you see the waiting list yesterday? I mean, UK, 244,000 people are now waiting. Have now been waiting more than a year for treatment. So and that's the highest figure since 2008. And so now we're not the only country with a backlog of patients. So it's a global problem, isn't it? You know.
Yeah, and just think, how do you quickly treat patients? You can't just cut them all up at the same time and give them surgery. Mm. The cheapest way and the quickest way is give them drugs. You know, and so immunotherapy, which is basically either intravenous or taken, you know, sort of orally wise, that's exactly what it does. So, you know, that should do well. But as I say, this antiviral is a free hit. It's a free back. It's nothing in the price. I mean, they expect going forward in 2021 to do $6.50 per share earnings. The shares are currently they're about 70 or something like that, 75. And therefore, they're on about 11.5 times 11 times earnings. So they're really cheap for a long-term grower. And they've been unfairly impacted this year by the elective procedures. And they still grew by 2% because of the success of the immunotherapy. And the other thing which has knocked sentiment a bit is that they're one of the, because they're into vaccines, they're one of the guys who who came up with a vaccine, but it was never going to hit the right efficacy or the highest efficacy of like Moderna, Astra and Pfizer. And so they pulled it in phase three trials because it wasn't going to be a step change in technology at all. Mm-hmm. So they've come off the market on that. So, but their oncology franchise is absolutely top rate. And the other thing to think about with immunotherapies, which is really, really good, it's worth if you've never looked at it, it's worth having a look at it because one thing you're also getting is immunodiagnostics, like, you know, the likes of Verici and these big US firms who are doing it as well. And what that means, if you can earlier diagnose people with cancer, it means you can treat them earlier with immunotherapies. And if you can treat them, the patient outcomes are much better. They have life expectancy a lot longer. You get shrinking of cancer cells. And for Merck, you sell more of the drug to them because they don't obviously, you know, they survive for longer. Mm-hmm. So it's an absolute, immunodiagnostics and immunotherapy goes hand in glove. It's absolutely perfect. Mm-hmm. And the other thing they're doing as well is that, you know, it's such a breakthrough level of technology over and above chemotherapy that if you can increase the application areas, which is what they're doing, as I say, into breast cancer, into kidney cancer and stuff like that, then again, you basically, it's like having a bigger shop window. People come in and you've got a bigger shelf of this product that does actually absolutely the same. So oncology as a franchise has just got such long-term growth opportunities, and they're the number one player with really trading on a ridiculously low value on a large, on sentiment wise. So don't expect to double your money. I'm not. Okay. This is in the Gilead bucket, large cap healthcare, long term grower, pays a nice dividend, hopefully get 10% per annum. If we have a wobble on the markets on portfolio construction, these will probably increase rather than go down because they're so cheap. They've got really good positions and people will be a flight to safety, as has always been. The sort of like the slight curveball that potentially could be thrown or pitched by Joe Biden, because there was always been talked about the Democrats thinking about potentially putting price controls on healthcare and drugs and stuff. But I just don't believe, after just coming through a pandemic and these guys have done all the heavy lifting, do you really want to batter them down immediately with sort of like a whole bunch of, you know, sort of like onerous sort of price controls, because you're just going to stifle innovation. So I just don't see it. But if people want a large cap healthcare, which I do, I bought a full position this week and it was great, no problems at all.
Lovely. Do you want one more idea? Yeah, I've been looking at the stock. I really like. I'm not going to mention it, actually.
Okay, what sector is it in?
I think you'd like it. The company is very quiet, under the radar, and the reason why they have is the corporate issue is now clearing. But I'll be sending it out in my newsletter.
Is that this weekend, is it?
Maybe out this week. Listen, I don't want to sort of alert anyway, because there's still things going on there. But the business itself is excellent. And it's an inflection point as well. But it's been kept under the radar because of corporate issues there. But that's clearing. But a very exciting sector. You know, I like sort of tech. That area is in that very hot tech sector. And
it whet my appetite there, Justin.
I know. Do you know what? And I'm not going to say anymore, but. No, I'm not saying more, but it's quite exciting.
You're going to buy it today on your birthday, aren't you?
No. Listen, I've got a little position, but I'm not going to go big because I think there'd be plenty of times to scale in opportunity here. Because
what sort of size is it? What sort of market cap?
It's I'm not going to say sub 100 million.
Sub okay. You said a big sub 100 million. Okay, so it's not exactly flipping ice. Glaxo or Merck, is it?
I never do big. I've dabbled before. Yeah, okay. But I mean, I never do that. But essentially, I do look for companies below 100 million. You know, and in fact, I try and look for 50 million. But
we'll look forward to talking about that in 2 weeks' time.
Yes, lovely, Paul. Thanks for that. Listen, if you're at the, you know, watch the video and get more to your inbox. Don't forget, hit that subscribe button, notification bell, and 2 weeks' time, bi-weekly, fortnightly, however you call it, we'll be back. Cheers, Paul. Speak soon.
Yeah, happy birthday as well, 50.
Don't remind me. At 4, Infrastrata. John was on the podcast, of course. Up 7.4% at 42 pence. At 3, Microsec Systems. Non-mover, 0.275. At 2, N4 Pharma. Down 13.5%, 10.9. And at 1, MGC Pharmaceuticals up 8% pretty much to 4.5 or 9%, just jumped right there. Okay, time for the top 5 most read RNSs are as follows. At 5, MG Pharmaceuticals investor presentation today at 10 a.m. Oh, I didn't know about that. Oh, I did actually. I was on it. At 4, Fast Forward Innovations, new investment in medical cannabis business. Very interesting there. At 3, it is Byzant Resources, acquisition of Metrock, completed and issue of equity. At 2, Bidstack Group. Bidstack teams up with Moat by Oracle. And at 1, Remote Monitored Systems. That's a general meeting link for webinar. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned. By the way, thank you very much for anything you've sent to me on Twitter and all that stuff and social media. But my birthday, 50 years of age today, on the 12th. And never too late to start a new project. And that's what I'm doing this weekend, probably, hopefully. So check it out. If you've not followed my on my newsletter, then go to sharepickers.com. That's sharepickers.com. Sign up for my newsletter and you'll hear about my new project. Very exciting. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciado.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.